Yes, a very good morning, everyone. It is Thursday, November 24, the Big Sports Breakfast, Sky Sports Radio, and a very good morning to you, wherever or however you are listening. Great to be with you. 24 hours on from the Socceroos' performance yesterday, that 4-1 defeat. Let's keep the faith and head towards the Tunisia game on Saturday night. A lot of commentary I saw yesterday, particularly on social media. They want the post-mortem straight away, everyone. We're still in the middle of a tournament. We can still make the round of 16. Having a look at the results overnight, another shock. Japan, our nemesis in Asia, they've beaten Germany 2-1 overnight. Morocco and Croatia finished scoreless. But if you were languishing about our result yesterday, what about Costa Rica? They've just been hammered 7-0 by Spain. Powerhouses, 2010 winners, of course. So that is a big result for Spain to start their campaign. Just some news in Formula One I'm just reading as well. Daniel Ricciardo, it's confirmed the 33-year-old Aussie is joining Red Bull as its third driver next season. So that role includes testing, simulator work, and commercial activity. And I say good morning to you, pup. I guess this is an admission almost, although he'd never say that, Ricciardo, that he should never have left Red Bull. Morning to you, mate.
Yeah, morning, boys. Morning to our listeners. Yeah, it's in an interesting stage now, isn't it? I think he's made some decisions throughout his career based on, how good a driver he is, there's no doubt. But unfortunately, he hasn't had the car to go with that driving skill. He hasn't got the results, certainly over his career, that he would like. And I think now it's a hard balance, you know. He still wants to be a Formula One driver. He still wants or still thinks he can compete at the highest level, but there's not many options available. So it seems like he is, Mido. It seems like he is keen to get back to that Red Bull team. And I don't know, has things changed there? Is the car any different? Does he think it's going to be different? Or is it just him clinging on to what might be his last opportunity if he does get one?
Loz, morning to you, mate. By the way, you're about to go on a couple of days off. Today's it for you.
Yeah, morning, boys. Yeah, off to New Zealand. Sister-in-law's 60th, so we're planning on having a celebration for her and catching up with Michelle's family. So looking forward to that. Hopefully the weather will be okay. I don't know whether I'll watch it, but I'm looking forward to seeing Australia hopefully hit back when they take on Tunisia on Saturday night. I know, you know, a lot of people are blowing up about our performance yesterday, but I think you're exactly right in everything that you said. You know, we're halfway through a tournament, and I don't think there'd be too many people who thought we're going to beat France. And I think, you know, an acceptable result was going to be, you know, if we got away with a draw, it was going to be over the moon, and if we got beaten by one or two goals, then that was probably acceptable. So I don't think we're too far away. And again, I don't think anyone thought we'd score, and Craig Goodwin scored, and we had another couple of opportunities there to put the ball in the back of the net as well. So, look, while our defence wasn't great, we created opportunities, and that'll be the positives that Graham Arnold will focus on going into this next game. But as we see throughout this tournament, there's already been a couple of upsets. We saw Argentina getting beat yesterday, and you mentioned this morning already, Japan shocked going down to Japan. So that's a massive result there in itself. And I would assume, you know, that there'll be a few more upsets along the way.
Yeah, Germany. Gee, it's a political World Cup as well. The Germans protest. Everyone's sort of getting stuck into FIFA after, well, Denmark's threatened to pull out of FIFA. Germany covered their mouths in the team photo just before kickoff after the national anthems, just to sort of voice, well, what they're saying is the silencing by FIFA, and they're against, naturally, FIFA sort of imposing that on them, and particularly wearing of the One Love armband. FIFA said that the players would be sanctioned with yellow cards if any of the captains came out wearing that armband. So this is a very political World Cup, particularly due to where it's being played. And, FIFA, a lot of the countries saying are silencing them. So a lot going on around that, but always politics involved when FIFA's involved, no doubt about that. Now, last night in the boxing, Paul Gallen has signed off with a win. Unanimous decision against Justin Hodges. The judges scored it 60-54, 60-54, 59-55. So Gallen ends his career, 15 wins, 2 losses, 1 draw, 8 KOs in those 15 wins. And Latrell's done his dough.
Yeah, I don't know whether he actually went ahead with it and put on the money, or whether it was just a throwaway line. But if he did, he certainly done his money. Gal was too good for Justin Hodges last night, and he even admitted after the fight, you know, he said he could just feel it in sparring and training that he slowed down. You know, with all respect to Hodgio, he said 12 months ago I would have beat him more convincingly, but it's time for him to pull the pin. He's made a lot of money in the last 3 years in boxing. He goes out a winner. You know, he's taken on some really good fighters. You know, he's taken on Lucas Brown, he's taken on Mark Hunt, and come away as victors in both those fights. Yes, there's been guys that he's fought that he was expected to win, and they were just knockabout ex-footballers or washed-up fighters, but he's taken on some guys that, you know, mightn't have been at the peak of their powers, but they've come back after Gal's beaten them and had good victories themselves. So it just goes to show you, Gal wasn't just a footy player. He started to turn into a bit of a boxer. And obviously Father Time has caught up with him, but, you know, for what he's done for the profile of the sport and also helped a lot of fighters along the way make some money, I think he's done a very good job.
Just some other results there last night. Daniel Saluka-Fifita of the Bunnies. He was beaten comprehensively by Bryce Jones. Unanimous decision. Siwa Takiaho, he won via unanimous decision over Jamin Lowe in what was Takiaho's pro debut. But in the main event, Michael Zarafa beat Danilo Criati also via unanimous decision, and it was scored 99-91, 98-93 and 98-92. So that sounds quite convincing, although Zarafa described his performance as, well, he didn't use this word, but crappy, that he overlooked his opponent, and, well, he was really the villain as well. He's taking that on, Zarafa. Zarafa's a W was the chant that the crowd were belting out there during the fight, after the fight, and he's called out Tim Zhu and Gennady Golovkin. You would think, based on that last night, he would have a way to go to challenging those two. Of course, he pulled out of that fight with Zhu last year. But we're going to speak to Ben Damon, the voice of Main Event Boxing, later this morning after the 7:30 news to get the breakdown on everything that occurred last night. Later this morning as well, Pup, we're going to speak to Lee Jamon, the Cricket New South Wales Chief Executive. I saw that the New South Wales side, we'll get to the PM's 11-2, which played against the West Indies in that match in Canberra at the first day of a tour match there. But New South Wales were rolled for 93 yesterday. They're last on the Sheffield Shield table. We've touched on this a bit recently, but there's something wrong there. New South Wales cricket, I mean, in your time, I mean, this it was sort of never at this sort of position.
No, not even close. I mean, not even close. And we had, you know, somewhere between 5 and 8 players playing for Australia. So even without the Australian players playing, we're never in this position. Yeah, there's some real concerns because there's plenty of talent in that team, but our performances are not good enough. I think, you know, I look forward to speaking to Lee, but I think there's already been some whispers around Phil Jakes, the coach, and where he sits. There's a bit of talk about that. I think at the end of the day, you know, there's been a saying in Australian cricket for, you know, 40 years that when New South Wales cricket's strong, Australian cricket's strong. And yes, we've got plenty of players playing in that international team now, but something is not right. Something in our call it our junior development system, all the way to the first class level, something is not right, because we are not producing anywhere near performing talent. I think talent's always going to be there, but performing talent. And, you know, I remember as a youngster, you know, first grade cricket was so strong that when you walked into that New South Wales team, you were ready to play. Then Sheffield Shield cricket was so strong, when you walked into the Australian team, you were ready to play. But at the moment, where, yeah, to be coming last is, oof, that's not a good place for New South Wales cricket.
The Australian PGA, now it tees off shortly. So if you're looking to get a bet on before that tournament starts, I believe Adam Scott is amongst them teeing off at 6 a.m. Oh, hang on, they're an hour behind us, so we've got another hour. I forgot it's in Queensland, of course, so they're an hour behind us. But the marker with Tab has Cameron Smith, who played with Cameron Smith, the, of course, rugby league legend, in a pro-am yesterday at Royal Queensland. And Cam Smith, $4 with Tab. Adam Scott, $9. Minwoo Lee, $11. Cam Davis, $12. $14 and longer the rest, or that market, stacks of markets for the golf. It's going to be a great couple of weeks with the PGA, followed by the Australian Open in the battle for the Stonehaven Cup. Well, the fallout from Justin Langer's comments to Code Sports and News Corp in the last couple of days, well, it was all over the papers yesterday, as we know, has continued, and naturally it was going to be some sort of fallout, pup. But the headline on the back page of the telly, Off Spin, Cricket Boss Slams Langer's Version of His Demise. So, well, the past has really been dug up, hasn't it? Less than a week out from the first test of the summer against the West Indies in Perth next week. And it's been reported that Pat Cummins had in his plans to catch up with Justin Langer and just clear the air while he is in Perth next week ahead of the first test. Now, Cricket Australia boss Nick Hockley has gone into bat for the players after Langer, of course, branded those leakers cowards in that interview. And Hockley says there are inaccuracies in Langer's comments. He pointed out the former coach rejected, remember, the six-month extension that was put to him, and Hockley is disappointed in Langer's comments. Now, this is interesting because Langer's set to work for Channel 7 this summer, and this article in today's Telegraph saying that, well, the players won't have to, will be interviewed by Langer during the broadcast. That could get quite icy, to say the least, after what's gone on in the past couple of days. But I was thinking about this yesterday, and John called us yesterday as well, pup, and I know, like, Justin Langer's got a lot of widespread support, and, you know, I love Justin Langer as a player, and obviously his contribution as a coach. We had success, particularly when you look at the 2020 World Cup win, got to number one in the world, etc. But, you know, coaches do say, my door is always open, but, you know, some personalities don't sort of invite that, even if they say it. And I just wonder, you know, I know it was a very small snippet of, you know, and we don't see so much that goes on behind closed doors, which you know about more than anyone. But I just thought back to Usman Khawaja in that test documentary when he sort of indicated that everyone was walking around on eggshells. And that was quite some time ago. So I don't think... It sounds like there were issues with Justin Langer's demeanour throughout pretty much his entire tenure as coach.
Look, you know, at the end of the day, I think the worst thing about this is it's been brought back up. So, you know, for me, I don't want to go into it. I've made it very clear. I think Nick Cockley, he has to come out and support his players. He's CEO of Cricket Australia. Yeah. He's got no choice, and I understand why he's done it. It means it's in the paper for another day. I still like to think that Paddy Cummins and Justin Langer will meet in Perth and sit down and have coffee and sort it out. This is not good for anyone. It's not good for cricket. Lang's no longer the coach. They've moved on. Andrew McDonald's the coach. The players are being judged on their current performances. Poor 2020 World Cup. Good bounce back against England. Now we've got test matches. I think, like we see in sport a lot, decisions get made. Some people agree, some people disagree. Turn the page, move on. You know, at the moment, the players or Cricket Australia have issues in regards to their performances are not as good as they would like, or they weren't in the 2020 World Cup. They need to assess that. And there's a bit of a you know, something going on in regards to the connection with the Australian fans. They need to assess that. But I want to see Australian cricket be the number one sport in the country. I want to see us get back to where we should be. And yeah, things like this don't help. Whatever, it doesn't matter what we think, really. Lang's not there. You know, I didn't agree with the 6 month contract. I think that was a bit of a slap in the face to Justin Langer. But also, yeah, I'm not in the team, so I don't know. You know, the players weren't happy. They had their reasons, it sounds like. They went about it how they did. They made their choices, and that's it. We live with it, we move on. And, you know, the leaders at that time, Paddy Cummins and Aaron Finch, they'll live with their decisions, right or wrong. They have to also have the opportunity to be true to themselves and do what they think's right. So, yeah, I just don't like it. I don't like that we're talking about it, that it's spoken this way. Lang was a great player for Australia, over 100 test matches. Paddy Cummins is now captain. Aaron Finch did a brilliant job in the short format. So I'd love us all to get on. It's not always the case, but when you don't get on, I think, you know, we've all got stuff through our career that you just keep quiet. There's no good, you know, coming out and trying to explain everything. You know, as Warney always taught me, never complain, never explain. There's been a million things in the media written about me that I wish the truth was known. But it causes more drama. It causes more drama for you. It causes more dramas for somebody else. And over time, you remember your side. You remember what hurt you. And you know, everyone's got their own opinion. Everyone's got their own way they saw the current, you know, that situation. So, yeah, I hope this thing just dies down. Let's just get back to playing good cricket and let's write articles about that and read articles about that.
By the way, Belgium and Canada just about to kick off at the World Cup. Belgium $1.50 with tab. Canada back in the World Cup for the first time in a while, $6. And the draw paying $4.50 in that game. There's no doubt, though, with the whole situation with the players whether it be Justin Langer or just the players generally. I mean, you only have to look at our text line. I just worry that, you know, the public support of the players has just really fallen in recent times. Doesn't the Australian cricketers run CA these days, says Jason at Windsor. Fitzy hasn't missed on the text line. He yelled at the boys and it upsets them. Biggest bunch of flogs in Australian sport, says Fitzy. But they're the sort of comments I'm seeing everywhere at the moment. I know that, social media can be quite a sewer at times, but it seems to be a bit of an image problem at the moment that the players have. But I'll tell you what sort of solves it all, pup. You know it better than anyone, just winning.
Yeah, that's the part I like. I think all of us would love to be respected by everyone and liked by everyone, but... Oh man, when you're playing sport at the highest level or you're in a leadership role, it's not realistic. It's not real. And then you go from that to them being told you're polarized. Well, like, you can't win. I think you've just got to find a balance where you know who you are as a person or as a team or as a leader and, you understand what comes with it. And then you accept that, okay, I'm not going to be liked by everyone. And I think Cricket Australia can be doing some stuff off the field to build this connection, get this trust back from the fans. But the players just need to get out there and play their best, tough cricket, compete, win, except when they lose, hold their head high, be disappointed, make sure you're signing autographs for every single kid, make sure you're doing all the little things you can to help grow the game. And it's going to take time. It's going to take a lot of time to build the trust back, but you've got to start, you know. You just got to start somewhere, and maybe this is it. Maybe they just don't say another word about JL, whatever Lang says, and, you know, he's going to be commentating. Lang won't speak to the players. Channel 7 won't do that to him. You know, he'll be there commentating. He's not a presenter. He doesn't need to go down and commentate, to ask questions of the players. There's, you know, a million people. Ricky Ponting can do that. Greg Blewett can do that. They've got a million commentators. So, you know, that's not going to be a problem. I just think, just use this to, let's move forward. Let's not fight back. Let's not try and compete with Justin Langer. If he wants to say something through the summer, let's just take our hit and go and play good cricket.
Langer Klanger threatens peace plan. Back page of the Australian, also back page of the Aussie. Battered and bruised, now it's Tunisia or bus. Plenty of Socceroos there today in the Sydney Morning Herald. Rue awakening, but World Cup campaign not over for Australia is the headline there. And Mercy Messi is the back page of the Daily Telegraph. And on the World Cup, as this Belgium-Canada game just begins, 30 seconds in 10 minutes' time, we will go to Qatar and speak to Phil Moss. Scoreless 9 minutes into the match between Belgium and Canada at the World Cup this morning. Just again, those results from overnight. Morocco and Croatia finished scoreless. Japan have caused the second big shock of the World Cup so far. They've beaten Germany 2-1. Spain have destroyed Costa Rica 7-0. In the other match overnight, and Mossy's coming up shortly. Just also last night in the match, the Sydney Super Cup match, Everton just smashed the Western Sydney Wanderers. That was 5-1 at Combank Stadium, and Anthony Gordon scored a hat-trick for the Toffees. Just your say on the players v. Justin Langer on the text line. A lot of people have been getting stuck into the players. Well, here's some other perspectives. Boys, Langer says he wanted honest feedback, but poor old Usman was honest, and look where that got him. In my experience, people say they want honest feedback, but not everyone can handle it. No name for that one. G'day all, there is only one winner in this Justin Langer soap opera, and that is the uneducated haters that have an agenda against Pat Cummins because he is a conscientious young man that does not fit the mould of the average Australian player. The hatred on social media levelled towards Patrick is disturbing. This needs to be nipped in the bud before it becomes another Adam Goods-like situation, says John from Wingham. Speaking about the New South Wales performance yesterday, roll for 93 against Western Australia. Mitch from Robertson writes, hey, Pup, any concerns for the SCG test? We could day two pitch in the Shield yesterday, and it's a Bunsen burner and very uneven bounce. Still, I guess, early days in the summer, isn't it?
No, it'll be fine. There hasn't been much cricket. They've played, well, we've seen, you know, some mixed results even through the 2020 on that wicket as well. Game against New Zealand was an absolute belter where Australia lost the first one, and then we saw another game that wasn't fantastic. It looked all right for the one day the other night as well. I think it'll be okay. I think, you know, maybe is that an area of concern for Sheffield Shield cricket as well, that we're not producing pitches that are similar to what we produce at the highest level. You know, we've seen teams get bowled out for not many runs. Is the wicket, you know, an issue? Like, you know, I think we heard Stewie Clark say at the Gabba, you know, don't always, you know, bowl quicks getting 5-wicket hauls, don't always take too much notice of that because you're playing on an absolute green seamer. And I know that's been the case for a long time in Shield cricket. You got to find a way to just perform, to make runs or take wickets. But I don't know, I'm looking at every single thing at the moment, you know, going, okay, how can we just improve? How can we improve the game of cricket in this country? How can we get, you know, young boys, young girls wanting to play the game? How do we get parents committed to taking their kids to the cricket and falling in love with the Australian team? How do we get, you know, grandparents going, nah, you know what, it's okay, this generation has still got that hunger and that fight and they want to win. So, you know, let's go all the way back to junior cricket. Let's go all the way back to country cricket and let's try and start to improve. Let's make improvements in every single area because that will get to the top. And that will get to the fans and that will get to the root of our problem. You know, I just think I don't know, maybe cricket has taken things for granted because we've been such an important sport for this country for a long time that we just assume that we're going to stay at the top of the tree. But, yeah, I hate reading, you know, the negativity around cricket in the media. I hate talking about it. And obviously, you know, we get messages all the time. People are frustrated and disappointed, so let's do whatever we can to turn things around quickly.
Mark from the Hills on the text line says, the problem with New South Wales cricket is we are letting all our good ones go. For example, Tim Ward, a local Parramatta boy, killing it for Tassie. And he's certainly not the only one. The interstate, well, I think someone mentioned Henry Hunt. I think his dad might have played for the Raiders, Loz.
Yeah, he did, Bitto, back in the 90s. He's a good young player. I watched a little bit of him last night. He got a few runs but didn't sort of go on with it in that PM's 11 game. But there's some good young talent. But again, we just haven't been able to get the best out of them for some reason. And that's a shame because New South Wales cricket have always been strong. And, you know, I can remember as far back as when I was sort of growing up and, you know, you had players that weren't being picked for Australia that were playing in the Sheffield Shield teams. But when you look through this New South Wales side, there's still plenty of talent there. But to be bowled out the way they have been this season, it's been pretty ordinary.
Just also on the text line here, morning boys, just wanted to say a happy 40th birthday to the Stanmore Stinker. Looking forward to backing some winners and deleting some beer on Saturday. Holmesy, thanks lads. So happy 40th to Stanmore Stinker who texts in. Don't know if it's already been mentioned, but Australian Patrick Kisnorbo has been appointed manager at French First Division club Troyes. Possibly a bigger appointment than Ange at Celtic, KB at Newcastle. Yes, saw this news yesterday. We'll speak to Mossy about it when we get a hold of him over there in Qatar. But Melbourne City coach Patrick Kisnorbo, he's leaving the A-League, hired to manage, as our listener there says, French League One club ES Troyes AC. So the club is part of that City football group. So Kisnorbo becomes the first Aussie to manage in one of Europe's Big Five leagues. So that is a fantastic achievement. Also watching at the moment, fellas, the Davis Cup, which has provided us with some amazing moments in Australian sport. Did you even know it was on at the moment? I mean, We're in the semi-finals. This news actually got past me yesterday. But yesterday, Australia qualified for the Davis Cup semi-finals for the first time since 2017. They beat the Netherlands in Spain, thanks to wins from Jordan Thompson and Alex de Minaur, and we're set to play either Croatia or Spain in a semi-final. Now, that Croatia-Spain match is on at the moment, and it is at a very critical point. So they're best of three rubbers now, the Davis Cup, formerly best of five, of course, under the previous format we knew so well. This new format, I'm not quite sure I've even got my head around yet, but Croatia won the first rubber against Spain to take the lead. So Borna Koric beat Roberto Bautista Agu, and at the moment in the second match, in front of a boisterous Spanish crowd, Pablo Carreño Busta has won the first set 7-5, and he's up against Marin Cilic, and it is on serve with Cilic leading 3-2 and has two break points at the moment, in fact, in the second set. So we'll track that to see who the Aussies are playing against in that semi-final, but gosh, you think of what Davis Cup did for the careers of Leighton Hewitt and Mark Philippoussis, etc. And now it's a great competition that's just fallen off the edge of the cliff, it feels like, at least here in our news.
I heard that the Davis Cup was on yesterday afternoon when I was doing groceries at Woolies. There was a news report that came over the microphone or whatever it was, and that was the first I heard of it as well, Mido. Unbelievable. How I know the Soccer World Cup's on, and we've just had, you know, the Rugby League World Cup, Cricket World Cup, but Davis Cup has always been massive.
It certainly has. So anyway, if we make the semi-final, well, if we are in the semi-final, we'll see who we're playing in the semi-final. We'll certainly track that. I think that's Saturday our time, I think that semi-final is. Hey, Legends, got a red-hot moral this Saturday. Race 9, Rose Hill, Naj Marty, dry track and will win, says Ben from Scone, sending that one through. Lozza, I guess you'll be taking a week off, will you? You going to hand the reins over, or how are you going to go about this?
I'm going to hand the reins over, Mido, but I think I've got one for us in Kembla on Saturday.
Okay.
So I might have to give you that information to put in the multi.
Oh, well, therefore...
Just got to speak to my mole this morning. Well, then once I speak to my mole and get the information, I'll either have it in the multi or I'll leave it out.
Well, therefore, it probably can be your multi then if you're going to give us one.
Mm. And maybe, then you can pick the next leg.
Well, maybe we go with Ben's selection from Scone, Naj Marty. I'll have a look anyway, but we'll figure that out. Okay, time to go to Qatar and our man on the ground, Phil Moss. Mossy, good morning to you, mate.
Good morning, Mido. Morning, everyone.
Well, good evening to you. Now, firstly, have you spoken to Graham Arnold? I mean, how is he, if you have so? And, well, you know, 24 hours on, what are your prevailing emotions about what you witnessed 24 hours ago?
Yeah, look, similar to what we spoke about last night, Mido. And, yeah, I did speak to Arnie briefly this morning. And, you know, he's in good spirits. No one likes to lose. And, you know, there's not too many worse losers or more competitive coaches that I know than Graham Arnold. But he was realistic and, you know, he gave the players pick them up this morning. That's the first priority, is to pick the players back up. But he said that they were all very realistic last night after the game, disappointed. But, you know, football has levels, and it has levels for a reason, like all sports. And you've got to put your hands up. As I said to Clarkey last night, you couldn't really lay the blame at the feet of our defence or our defensive structure. You've got to put your hand up and say France were just too good. They were absolute, class above. And if you look at the net worth of our Socceroos is around about 35 million. Well, Mbappe is worth 270 million himself. So, you know, perspective is needed in these situations. We hope to catch them cold. We were going to have to be brilliant and they were going to have to be poor. That was probably the case in the first 18 minutes, and that's why we're up 1-0, but then they found another gear, and I still think they had a few more gears to go if they needed them.
Mossy, I was going to ask, and I know I asked you yesterday, and I suggested, was the defence a problem? And you said, sometimes you get a better team. So if we play the same brand of footy and the same way as we did against the French, do we win the next two games?
Look, I think if you can if you can play for longer periods the way we did in that first 20 minutes, yeah, I think we're a chance, Clarkie. I mean,
Look, the French are just that good.
Some of the criticism, but mate, they are that good, Clarkie. Yeah. They really are, mate. Like, you know, if you look, forget the front line for a moment. Think about the midfield with Griezmann, you know, and then they've got monsters at the back who they're 6'6". Brick, you know what, and they move like ballerinas. Just remarkable. And Lloris in goal, like he's a world standard goalkeeper and has been for many, many years. So, you know, it was a great experience for us. And I think, you know, it gives us that, you know, that sort of shock treatment that we're in the World Cup now. We've got Tunisia on Saturday night. And I think if we can play for extended periods the way we did in that first 15 minutes, we played some good stuff. We scored a very good goal that showed that we know we can execute a game plan tactically. Some of the criticism from home about not playing with two strikers up front to press France a little bit higher and take a few more risks, they are spoken by people who have never been in the hot seat. And, you know, their livelihoods depend on getting results. And, you know, there's a whole heap of science behind why you select teams and why you play a certain way against certain opposition. And that's fine to have opinions, no problem whatsoever. But guaranteed, there's a lot of education going on behind the scenes as to why we played the way we did.
Well, see, Mossy, I don't see it as a surprise. I see it as what most people expected. I mean, everyone's patriotic and everyone wants to win and everyone wants to see us do well, but I don't think there would have been 90% of the country expecting us to win against France. And if we come away with a draw, that would have been a miracle of some sort. But, you know, to lose by 3 goals, yes, it doesn't look good. But I think you're right. I think if we can play for longer periods, from what I saw, they can trouble a side like Tunisia. And then if you win that game, you're still a chance of moving through. So I don't know where all the doom and gloom has come after one game against the reigning world champions.
Well, I think it comes from being a victim of our own success, Loz, because, you know, this is our, obviously, you know, we've been to consecutive World Cups now since 2006. And all of a sudden, we have this, I don't know, this expectation that we should be at every World Cup. And it doesn't come that easily. Italy have missed out in the last two World Cups. You know, that's just a sign of how hard it is to get to a World Cup. We're about to go to 48 teams, which will certainly help in the future. Which I still disagree with. I think it dilutes the product, but that's a debate for another day. But if you look at Spain today, you know, they've dusted Costa Rica 7-0. Mm. Now, if we opened up last night against France and took more risks, we were at risk of copping 7 or 8. No problem whatsoever. So, you know, I think Tunisia and Denmark are both good sides. They're both very physical, but they're certainly not France. So we're in with a shot.
And you only have to look at some of the other upsets already at the tournament. Argentina getting beaten yesterday and Germany going down last night in a massive upset.
Mate, that was fantastic. And we've just got back from watching that with a group of friends. And that was unbelievable. Germany were completely dominating until a period of the game where all of a sudden Japan started to claw their way back, had a couple of chances, and then bang, bang. It was the 75th and the 83rd minute, Doan and Asano. And, mate, the place was erupting. I mean, there was some German fans at the place we were watching it, obviously not at the ground, but even they were just completely shell-shocked. But the goodwill and the feeling of the upsets is fantastic. It really is. And that's what World Cups are about.
Gee, it's a political World Cup, isn't it, Mossy? Just looking at, Denmark are threatening to pull out of FIFA. Germany covering their mouths to protest against a perceived silencing by FIFA. There really hasn't been a World Cup like it to this extent. And I guess the protesting and everything going on around the politics of the game.
Yeah, it's funny, you know, actually. All the politics is happening out on the field. It's playing out that way. And I don't agree with it. I just think footballers are there to play football. And yes, of course, you've got to stand for things and you know, use the platform that you've got to, you know, I think fight for the greater good. But, yeah, you don't like to see it become political out there on a pitch. Funnily enough, ironically enough, I was at the Australian Embassy this morning as a guest of Football Australia for their AGM, and that was probably the place of least politics going on. It was a fantastic AGM, and but yeah, you know, I think that some of the football has been absolutely breathtaking. There's been huge upsets, as Loz just alluded to. And I think that the tournament from a football perspective is shaping really nicely.
Portugal tomorrow. Cristiano Ronaldo, it's officially, he's leaving Manchester United, which was, well, unbackable odds, really, wasn't it, after the interview with Piers Morgan. But it's just going to be fascinating to watch and to see how and whether it has affected certainly the Portugal side and in particular Ronaldo himself.
That's right, and his teammate Fernandes from Manchester United, because there was a little bit of undercurrent in the media last week that you know, Fernandes wasn't too happy with Ronaldo and coming out with that interview. Their teammates here in Qatar for Portugal, of course. Now the players have come out and said they haven't even discussed Ronaldo's club future. Now you know that that's probably playing opposites day. There's no doubt. In my mind whatsoever, they would have been talking about it behind closed doors. But let's see what happens. I mean, he's obviously a massive name. There's talk about him maybe even going to PSG. Imagine that. My goodness. But at 37, you know, time's running out for him. This would be his last World Cup. I don't think there's any doubt about that, unless he's on the coaching staff in 4 years' time. But it'll be interesting to see where he ends up and how he ends his career, because, you know, this is a stage that he's so used to performing on. Portugal, you know, they've got a chance of going deep into this tournament if they've got the right dynamic in the dressing room. But time will tell, and tomorrow's their first game against Ghana.
Yeah, Mossy, that's what I was going to ask. How important now, then, is this World Cup for Ronaldo? And again, I know he's 37. I know a lot of people say he's not at his absolute best or at his peak, but mate, this guy is still that good. Surely he can be defining in regards to Portugal going all the way in this World Cup or getting as close as they can.
Yeah, look, I think if they do go deep in this World Cup, he will have to be defining, Clarkey, because he is, you know, he's just that big game player. He scores big goals in big moments. And, you know, I've got no doubt, because let's not let the Manchester United situation cloud the fact that Ronaldo is absolutely revered by his teammates in the national team. He's always put his country, you know, close to his heart, and never shirked a tournament or a training camp for his country. So they'll want to send him out on a bright note. Whether they can go all the way or not, yet to be decided, of course, determined. I don't think they're capable of going all the way, but certainly going deep in the tournament, Ronaldo scoring some goals would be nothing less than his career deserves.
Just back home, some big news in regards to Patrick Kisnorbo, Mossy. He's off to France to manage in Ligue 1 and ES Troyes AC, which is part of the City Football Group. So he's the first Aussie to manage in one of Europe's big five leagues.
Fantastic news, Mido. I was thrilled to see this. Paddy Kisnorbo is a really good guy. He works so hard. We saw A-League's All Access on him a few weeks ago, and just the relationship he has with the players. And there's a fantastic video that Melbourne City have put out today, which is tonight our time over here, but it just shows him addressing his players, and the love in the room and the warmth is quite phenomenal. He drives his players very hard, but clearly has a great relationship with them. He was in tears. He's taking a couple of coaching staff with him as well, so real challenge there. Rado Vidicic will be the interim coach for Melbourne City until they find a full-time replacement. Yeah, good luck to Paddy Kisnorbo. Troyes it's a great club. What a fantastic club to start in Ligue 1 over there in France. And as you said, he's paving a way that hasn't paved before by Australian players, coaches. Sorry, so a great move.
Good on you, Mossy. Enjoy it. We'll chat tomorrow.
Look forward to it, guys. Thanks for having me.
Roberto Martinez is Belgium, scoreless against Canada at the moment over there at the World Cup in Qatar. Morocco and Croatia finished scoreless last night, but a huge result for Japan. Our nemesis in Asia, they've beaten Germany 2-1. Two goals reasonably late on in that match after the Germans scored from the spot in the first half to take the lead. But, two goals between the 75th and 83rd minute ensured Japan took all 3 points. Spain destroyed Costa Rica 7-0. In the other game this morning, Everton beat Western Sydney Wanderers 5-1 in the Sydney Super Cup last night. Now, we've got the Australian PGA teeing off shortly, and we're going to speak to our man Paul Gow just shortly as well. Yesterday in the NBA, by the way, Ben Simmons, he embraced the hate as, his Brooklyn Nets were beaten 115-106 against, the Philadelphia 76ers side that were without Joel Embiid and James Harden. But, he made a couple of three free throws and shrugged his shoulders at the Philly crowd. He thought, the boos would be louder. He was taunted with F. Ben Simmons chants throughout the game. He had 11 points and 11 assists, so, had a decent contribution there, Ben Simmons. But he sort of just faced up, as he had to, I guess, to what he was going to cop there yesterday in Philly. In the PM's 11 game against the West Indies, and, they chose to bat the PM side and reached 9 for 297 at stumps. And Matty Renshaw at the top of the order, 81. Marcus Harris, 73, his opening partner, as well as they put on 134 for the opening wicket. Peter Hanscom, 55, the other batsman of note there yesterday. But, Harris is in that test squad at the moment. I know that you're a fan of Renshaw. Out of the two of them, I think Renshaw's the one with the more promise. We've seen Harris at test level quite a bit. I know we've seen Renshaw there as well, but it just seems like Renshaw's a different player to the one that we saw when he was so young.
Yeah, he's definitely made a lot of improvements in his game. I think he felt he probably had a weakness against spin, so he went into the middle order and worked on that. He's got a much sounder defence against spin bowling. He's got a good sweep shot now. And now he's decided to go back to the top of the order where I think he should be. I think he should be opening the batting, but also be good enough to, if he gets into his innings, take spin down or play spin the way he now is. So I think he's made the right decision. And he's still, 26? So he's at a perfect age to still have a long career for Australia. Maybe the selector just wanting him to continue to score runs to push himself at the top of that tree to be the next opener. But you never know as well. A couple of injuries and he might just get a crack. Davey Warner's getting older and made it clear where he sees his career. Usman Khawaja's made it clear where he sees his career. So I think we're going to see Renshaw back in Australian colours, there's no doubt. It's just how long do we have to wait? I think more importantly, I'm not sure West Indies are winning this game against the PM's 11. That's a scary thing. If they can't beat the PM's 11, how are they going to go against the Aussies?
G'day, Gowie.
Yeah, morning, fellas.
Okay, can you tell us about this, the PIP result, so the Player Impact Program, which results in some significant money to players?
Yeah, sure. They started last year in a little bit of a defence against the Live Tour because they come out with so much money. So they've upped this to $100 million and the results are in. Believe it or not, Tiger Woods, who hardly played a game of golf, $15 million. He's the winner. McIlroy, $12 million. To share, $100 million is quite amazing. Adam Scott, two Aussies, sorry. Adam Scott at $2 million and Jason Day down at $2 million. So they only go 20 deep with that at the moment, but it's an interesting one. That's an algorithm between, your social media side, how long you've been on TV, all that sort of stuff. It goes all in there and out pops a number. And if you're 1, 2, or 3, well, you've made a bucket load of money. So some of the big name players are happy with it because they've been, compensated for them being stars, but the ones down the bottom aren't. It's not stretching far enough down to the bottom players.
Gowie, I'm sure plenty of people will get out and watch Cam Smith have a hit over the next couple of weeks. And I saw on the news last night he's actually playing with the other Cam Smith and he handed him a Queensland Origin jersey. Have you played with Cam Smith, the NRL player?
No, I haven't. I tried to have him on the show this year, but he was too busy in retirement. But I did walk a few holes with him. I'm going to have him on the show for next season. But it was interesting walking along. Cam Smith, the footballer, he was so nervous. He was ridiculous. His first tee shot of the day went along the ground, not very far, and he's actually a good player. When he got into it,
He actually hit a bunch of good shots, and I spoke to Gem Smith, the golfer, about it, and he said, oh, yeah, that was funny, the first shot. But after that, he said he's really got into it. He can hit it and play. He plays up at the Green Golf Club with Fatty and the boys up there, and he's quite enjoying his golf. He's 1-2 days a week and playing, and but quite a spot for him to
have
play.
Have they met before?
No, I don't think he has played in it before.
But have they, the two Smiths, met before?
Yes, they have. Yeah, each other, absolutely. Yeah, they certainly have. And to this couple of weeks that Cam Smith has been home from the US, he's gone and trained. Ben Eichen got him out to train with the Broncos, and he said it was quite funny. He said, I went into the gym and I'm doing a weight session with him. He said we had to change all the weights. They had ridiculous amounts of weight on their squatting. He said, so I went back down to my weights. But he said he loved it. He's a mad rugby league fan. He watches it as much as he can on NRL Watch overseas. And he said, I try to not miss a game. And, as soon as I seen him for the first time, I haven't seen him for a couple of years. What do you think the first thing he ribbed me about was? The state
para.
Of origin.
Origin.
Well, actually, he was all right with para. He was good with para. He was soft with me with para, but the state of origin, they just kick you right in the nuts with it. It's unbelievable. The first thing out of his mouth when I seen him on Tuesday was that. So, instead of a hug, it was more of a, how about you guys choking in the state of origin?
Well, speaking of Queensland.
Still a little turd.
Speaking of Queensland, Gowie, who impressed you at the PGA Championship in Brisbane?
Yeah, well, I watched him in the practice rounds and from Monday, Tuesday, and obviously into the Pro-Am yesterday. And there's a bunch of young players that are really firing up. Louis Doblin, and I know we can't back them all, but the guys who were striking it well and sort of had their head down, Louis Doblin, Jared Felton, Todd Sinnott, and Travis Mythe, they're the guys I looked at. And Maverick Ancliffe is another Queenslander. I just like Queenslanders around Queensland golf courses. These greens are really tricky here. They've got a little bit of grain through them, and you've got to read that into it. And so there's a bunch out there, and it's awesome to see. You should see the crowds. Just on a, Cam had a practice round with Adam Scott on Tuesday morning, and there was thousands out. It's the days of Greg Norman, which was fantastic. I did a clinic with Adam Scott in the afternoon for the kids, and there was a couple hundred kids sitting there just, staring at Adam Scott hitting these most beautiful golf shots. So having these big players back, no matter what tour they play in the world, is only good for our tour back here, and it inspires the younger generation to come along and play.
Well, we've got the Australian PGA on this weekend, and Gowie, and Cam Smith's a $4 favourite. Is he favourite to win it in your mind?
Oh, I don't know. I spoke to his coach, and we're looking through a few of the stats this week because they track his sleep. They track a lot of things that he does, and he's worn out already. But it's part and parcel of being the Open champion and coming back to your home state. So, but he's a competitor. I'm not writing him off, but he's had every interview. He's had people just hanging out from him, from family and friends and everything. So, tough week. I like him next week. If he doesn't play well this week, his odds are going to go out. I'm going to put everything I've got on him for next week because he's away from a lot of that noise that's there. But not writing him off, his competitor. Obviously, you've got Ryan Fox and Adam Scott and Cam Davis, all these really, really good players. But I'm going with Min Woo. Walked a couple of holes with him. He's only at $11, but just like the way he's hitting it, he's flying under the radar. He's had a good season without having a great season. The American stint that he had wasn't great. Played good in the major, in the Masters there. But when he went back to the European Tour, he played really well. And another one that I just mentioned is Maverick Ancliffe. He hasn't had a great year, but I just like a young guy like him that's mature. He's 27, 28 years of age, that plays a lot around these golf courses, knows them well, and just might be his week.
Okay, Minwoo leads $11 with Tab, and Maverick Ancliffe a $67 chance. And tell us about Aaron Wilkins' breakthrough win in the Queensland PGA.
Yeah, this is pretty cool. If you're late Sunday afternoon, there was a playoff for the Queensland PGA Championships over at Nudgee, and it was one young kid, Jack Carter, had come to the last hole, par 3, cross water, leading by one, into the water, made a double bogey, missed the playoff. It was Aaron Wilkin and Justin Warren, who I've tipped on this show, and that's a kid to follow, actually. I don't know how he'll play this week, but last week was good. But Aaron Wilkin, you've heard the name before, Brad Wilkin, is his brother, the rugby union player, plays for the Melbourne Rebels. And Aaron's been around for a while. We've been waiting for him to win, and he won in the playoff, a couple of whole playoffs. And, you know, he's one of those guys that I've been watching for years. He grew up with my nephew, and he's a good young player. He just hasn't broken through. So now he's broken through. It's another name to watch.
We just got a question on the text line. Can you boys ask Gowie when the episode with Harry Kuehl is out?
Well, that's an interesting one. It's not. We're going to do it next year. Harry, when I went up to Manchester to do the shoot, he pulled out. He had to do something. So I was very disappointed that happened. But not to worry. He's booked in for next year when we go back to the UK to shoot some more shows.
Oh, good stuff. Well, Gowie, you enjoy your weekend, mate. Enjoy the PGA.
Thanks, fellas. It can all be watched on Fox Sports.
Get into Totally Workwear Rydalmere for all your summer workwear gear. We stock the biggest and best brands like King G, Hard Yakka, FXD and Steel Blue. Does your workwear branding need a new freshen up? Darren and the team will get you sorted. Ask for Loz's discount when you buy your new pair of boots, and Darren will give you 20% off the price, or $20, sorry, off the price. Open until 7 p.m. every weekday. Totally Workwear Rydalmere, 279 Victoria Road, opposite Bunnings and Macca's. We've got you covered.
Okay, we've got Adam Pengilly. Adam, good morning to you.
Morning, Jared. Morning, boys.
Let's go west. How's the winter bottom looking over there in Perth this weekend?
Yeah, good feel, Jared. Very keen to see how these eastern state horses go heading across west to Ascot this week. We don't get too many east coast horses, I suppose, traditionally for the Railway Stakes and the Kingston Town, but we do have a couple in the Winterbottom Stakes this week, sorry, and I'm keen to see what the Godolphin pair do with Alana and Paul Ailey. I know Godolphin are desperate to try and win a Group 1 with Paul Ailey to try and, I suppose, firm up his stud career a little bit, but just got a funny feeling that Valana's just the right horse at the right time, isn't he? I know they saved him for this race after he went up to Newcastle and won the Hunter. Coming back in trips, probably a little bit of concern, but I think he's a really promising horse. I can see him ticking off a Group 1 there at Perth on the weekend. Rossfire obviously coming across for Robert Heathcote as well. He's had a pretty solid campaign, obviously extremely hard to beat, but I'm just siding with a Godolphin runner at this stage, Jared.
What about the Starlight Stakes at Rose Hill?
Yeah, I know most of the focus laws will be on this Festival Stakes at Rose Hill on Saturday, but very keen to see how this Starlight stays. The one horse that jumped straight off the page to me when I was having a quick flick through the race last night was Through the Cracks. He looks a big price of mine. I know 1,100 metres is probably a little bit short of his best, and particularly with his racing pattern. You don't want to get back in the second half of the field around Rose Hill, 1,100 metres. So I thought his first up run was really acceptable at Randwick. He's probably a really hard horse to place at the moment, given what he's achieved in his career so far. He's sort of upping the handicap, so he really needs to tick off one of these listed or Group 3 wins, and he just might find the right race there on the weekend. I don't think it's a race with a whole lot of depth. It's not a really strong listed contest, it must be said, so he might be able to bring the class. He's going to need a few breaks to go his way, but he's probably a lot worse than each way betting that Starlight Stakes on the weekend.
What about Brunkner in that race, making a return to racing?
Yeah, long time off the scene, that's not Loz, and he goes really well. I just trying to weigh up this race. It's a really difficult one to try and get a bit of a handle on. But I just think that Through the Cracks has got a win in this preparation. So I'm respecting Bruckner, obviously, particularly from the stable. It comes from a really astute stable. But I just think that Through the Cracks might be able to produce a peak performance there second up at Rose Hill.
Adam, what's Joe Pride thinking for his plans for autumn?
Yeah, he's talking about Private Eye Clarkie, a horse who's had an amazing spring campaign considering what he did in the Everest and coming out and winning the Winner's Stakes, and then obviously going down to Melbourne. I don't think that if Joe had his time over again, he would have run him over the mile down there on Champions Day. He's virtually said now that we're going to hold him back to the sprint trips in the autumn in Sydney and maybe target a race off the Newmarket first up, and then a few weeks into the TJ Smith Stakes, and then maybe All-Age Stakes. So could have shocked me because last year he was running over trips over a mile and even 2,000 metres. I thought, okay, that's probably his go now. But this campaign got a lot more speed in his legs. I think Joe's sort of thinking that, hey, we'll bring him back in trip and try and target these sprint races where a lot of the big money is. And particularly with a change in the guard in our sprint ranks at the moment, Nate Strip's not getting any younger. Same with Eduardo. Masked Crusader seems to be struggling to win another race. So it might be the right play, long-term play from Joe to target those sprint races with Private Eye.
Well, Adam, you imagine the Socceroos will never forget the night they took on the world champions France, and particularly Nathaniel Atkinson when he had to deal with Kylian Mbappe. It was something else, wasn't it?
He was on the merry-go-round, wasn't he, Jared? All day. I feel sorry for the guy. The speed of Mbappe, everyone knew he's a class player. He's one of the world's best, and he's quick. But when you watch him closely in a game like that, how do you stop him? What do you do? What do you do to stifle him? It's almost impossible. And a couple of those little touches as well, that back heel and everything like that. He's he's a freakish play. I thought the Socceroos were pretty poor in the second half, it must be said. They seemed to run out of gas and didn't really lay a glove on France after half time, did they? But they just got to win this game against Tunisia on Saturday night now. If they win this game against Tunisia, well then it's going to set it up for the final group clash against Denmark. So, yep, big test of Graham Arnold to try and get the boys to recover after that loss to France. And we'll see how it plays out on Saturday night, our time, isn't it? Saturday night.
Yep,
good time.
9 p.m.
To
9 o'clock,
watch.
I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great time to watch, Loz, isn't it? So,
yeah, certainly is. Hopefully they can do well, and hopefully the Wallabies can do well as well, because they're taking on Wales and they need a victory. But what did you make of Angus Crichton getting a downgrade off that two-game suspension from the World Cup?
What happened with all the World Cup suspensions, Loz? There were so many guys who just got off, didn't they?
Mate, they all got off. I didn't think he'd get off completely, Angus, but one game match, I suppose that's fair enough. I always thought it was going to be difficult to get the two matches off, given that Harris Tavita was concussed out of that incident.
Well, is it bad to say that I thought he was even a little bit harsh done by to be simping in the game? Like, I know he raised his elbow and he probably shouldn't have done it, but you know, the ball was dead. He shouldn't have been tackled in the first place.
No, but the problem is he raises his elbow.
Yeah, I know. You can't do it. I know you can't.
You can't raise your elbow. You can put your hand up to stop someone coming at you, but you can't raise your elbow, and then if you contact him in the head, he's concussed. I don't think you could get away with that.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, good news for the Roosters. He'll be back nice and early in the season.
Oh, I'm tempted to have something on Garner tomorrow morning. A Portugal implosion, Adam. They're $1.40 favourites. Your man, Ronaldo. I just have a feeling. Are you with me?
Well, it's been a World Cup of upsets, hasn't it?
Well,
so far, really. Like Saudi Arabia and Japan. It seems like all the Asian teams are either doing exceedingly well, like Saudi Arabia and Japan, or they're being absolutely horrible, like Australia and Iran. So hasn't really been any in between. But it wouldn't surprise me. It wouldn't surprise me at all. I just don't know what's going to happen with this World Cup. Like Portugal, there's so much noise around Ronaldo, isn't there? Obviously, Manchester United now releasing him. It's got to have some sort of effect on the group, doesn't it, Jared? Like, you can't completely block something like that out, can you?
No, I'm going to have something on them. Garner, $8.50 with Tab. The draw, $4.50. Portugal, $1.40 for that one. That is the 3 a.m. game tomorrow morning. Mate, you have a good day. Chat tomorrow for your mail for Festival Stakes Day there at Rosehill.
Thanks, Jeff. Before I go, I'm up at the golf as well with Yowie. Have something on Cam Davis.
Okay.
Cam Davis, I think, is a chance this
year. Okay, Cam Davis. And this is all about to tee off, isn't it? So
they're literally about to tee off in a minute. So I think I was speaking to Adam Scott yesterday. It's only 6 o'clock up here in Queensland. They're an hour behind, obviously, Sydney and Melbourne. Adam Scott was saying this is the earliest tee time he's ever had in his life, in his professional career.
Well,
he's about to tee off at 6 o'clock.
Well, Yowie was telling us before how Cam Smith, his coach or his team, they monitor his sleep, and it's really poor this week, obviously. Imagine they monitored our sleep, Loz. How would that
good luck.
We can
be saying, what are you doing?
have a great day, mate.
See you, boys. Chat tomorrow.